Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. This is Adrienne Lopez, and it's so exciting to be back here on the airwaves in Juneau, Alaska, for my second show on Focus on Community from KTOO News in Alaska's capital. In the next hour, don't miss my interview with Alita Buss, chairwoman of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. Alita bikes or walks to work as a legislative aide for Juneau's State Senator Dennis Egan. She worked with the city to craft the greenhouse gas emissions inventory and has been involved in climate change action in Juneau ever since. Born in Juneau, she loves kayaking, is training for her first marathon, nice, and cooking her way through the Fiddlehead Cookbook, which actually might be something we have to explain later for those not in Alaska, I guess, who are listening tonight. And those out there who have questions anytime on the show, you can write in to jeff@ktoo.org, and hopefully we'll get those here into the studio and onto the air. So remember to write in if you have questions for Alita on the show tonight. Now, before we get started, I just wanted to have a brief introduction and also take a moment to just recognize the incredible tragedy and the sadness being faced by the Norwegian people in the past few days, and how it's a country that really, you know, we're on the other side of the world here in Alaska, but I feel like I think there's a lot in common between Alaska and Norway, and they are also a country, to tie it into the show tonight, that has advanced sustainability. They've been a leader in the past. Their government had one of the first agendas for corporate social responsibility and promoting better practices, and Jens Stoltenberg, who's the prime minister, spoke in Chile a few years back. I had the opportunity to listen to him, and he was very adamant about climate change and getting the G20 countries to get involved in these issues. So I really just want to send out good vibes and condolences to everyone there, and hopefully they heal from that tragedy. So, Alita, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adrienne.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time tonight. Rainy Juneau night. You're not missing any sunshine tonight.
No. Glad to be here to talk about sustainability with you. So thanks for having me.
Well, good. Well, I think it's always important to give people a little bit of background on what we're talking about. And the Juneau Commission on Sustainability has been around for a little while. So maybe just give us some background, how it got started, and how we define sustainability in general here.
Great. I'd be happy to. Yep. The commission was started in 2007. The mayor signed on to climate action plan for local governments around the world, and the commission was formed back then. And so our official definition of sustainability is that a sustainable community seeks to advance the economic, social, environmental, and governmental well-being of the community without compromising the quality of life of future generations.
Okay. That's quite a definition.
That's the very academic definition.
Yeah. You take a little bit from the Brundtland Commission, right? A little bit of the original definition of sustainable development for the future, right? Future generations.
Yeah,
I like that piece.
Exactly. Yep.
That's
good. We're doing it for the kids of tomorrow.
That's the point, right? And also us, who like to live a good quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And have that balance. So, okay, so it started back, and were there any leaders in town in this community that kind of were, I don't know, these people that were proactively pushing the city to do this?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, Mayor Botello, and you could talk to Bruce better about how he, you know, found this as a project and a priority of his, but he signed on with, at that time, it was called ICLE, Local Governments for Sustainability.
Oh, yeah.
And saw the need for it in Juneau. I think Juneau's very well positioned as a capital city to kind of be a model for what communities can do to, you know, promote that environmental, governmental, economic well-being.
Yeah.
So,
of course.
And then, you know, at that time, I'm sure there were other leaders. That was kind of before my time. I got more involved in 2008 and 2009. Our commission is made up of 11 members, including an assembly member liaison and a planning commission liaison. And
okay.
So I know Bob Dahl, was always very active in the getting goings of the commission and and some other key community members.
Okay. Now, I know you reach out to get anybody involved, right? Anybody out there who is in Juneau could get involved in the commission and come and participate, right?
That's right, yeah. And I think you've been to a Sustainability Commission meeting, and we've had Nathan Sobeleff from Sea Alaska
talk
to us. Different community leaders who were involved with energy issues or other sustainability issues. Bob Deering does energy work for the Coast Guard and is in charge of converting the biomass or the Sitka Air Station into biomass heating, and he's done he sees that vision for Juneau, I think, in the future. So he's come to some of our meetings to talk about sustainability issues. So we do get a lot of good public, you know, input from different projects that are going on. And we, you know, then we do outreach. We try to be at different community things like UAS Community Day,
having
people to interact with the public and say, you know, what does this really mean to you, and how are you maybe making changes in your life to be more green?
Yeah. And on that note, do you think the public is receptive here? I know you say it's Alaska's capital city, and it seems to be more progressive here than in other parts of Alaska. but do you see people getting excited about this and kind of saying, hey, I'm going to look at my carbon footprint or go shop locally? Or
yeah, absolutely. It's just becoming more and more popular. And I think Juneau, especially after our avalanche, you know, sent the price up fivefold, Junoites just went out like crazy and got air racks for drying their laundry loads and changed their light bulbs. You know, shops sold out first, you know, but with energy efficient light bulbs, and we saw huge energy savings. But you also see that with the Juneau Sunday Market.
Which we'll talk about a little bit later too.
People really were getting great feedback from having locally handcrafted art products, but also locally produced food available every Sunday at the Jack, and that's been really positive. There's also a number of community gardens that are around town that people have their own plot and can do their own things, or just even doing a little herb garden at home.
Well, great. So there's all kinds of outreach you've done. And now, the objectives and mission, I know you say in your definition there, it's really not only a triple bottom line, but you're thinking about government, economy, social, environmental. You mentioned one other one there. do you feel like, and I think it's good for the audience too, to educate the audience that when we talk about sustainability, it's not just, you know, green, right? There's all these other components. And do you think, and this goes into maybe the objectives of the group, that you're trying to do something in all those areas? Maybe just hit on those, I think at least the issues for this year. I know you guys prioritize different
issues. I think that's a great point to just recognize that sustainability isn't just environmental. Like, you think green and you equate that exactly with environmental, but it's also social and it's also economic. So, we're trying to delve into these different areas a little bit more.
Yeah, that's good.
Everything is very interconnected, should we say.
That's a good point. I agree. Now, I looked on the website a little bit, which we'll say at the end of each break tonight, just so people can check out the information. If you're not local, you know, you can always go to the websites. If you're not able to access those, you can write to Alita. We'll give you your information later on. But there's also subcommittees working in between meetings. So you try to have a meeting once a month. Is that kind of how it works out? And then you have these subcommittees working. Tell me more about that.
Sure. We have, our meetings are every first Wednesday of the month. We meet at 5:15 at the downtown library conference room, rain or shine, 12 months a year. And then between those monthly meetings, we do have subcommittees. So we have an energy committee that's energy/greenhouse gas, which is working. That group is really concentrating on the climate action plan that we'll probably talk about maybe more in detail. But the city has prioritized this climate action plan as a part of their work. And that group is really working with Scheinberg and Associates and Skillbridge Consulting on the climate action plan. And then we have a sustainability indicators subcommittee that is focused on another one of the commission's top priorities, is develop sustainability indicators. This year, so we have a way to measure sustainability over time and track our progress and say, you know, it really, you know, pins it down to, okay, how, you know, what
percentage what, of, yeah. A lot of numbers. Exactly.
And then we, you know, we try to do outreach like we talked about a little bit. So.
Well, good. Now, I know another important relationship to build is with the private sector, right? You want, in some cases, I know maybe later we'll mention the role of government and how they've taken on an active role with, you know, the city employees and everything. But what has been the relationship with the private sector? Do you have people on the commission that are working actively with companies locally?
We have some people who represent the private sector mm-hmm. who are sitting members on the commission.
Okay.
An architect who does private work. And, you know, we have a pretty wide variety of commission members, I guess, state, you know, local government, but also folks at the university. I know they're not private, but, you know, we probably could do a little bit more, I guess, with private industry work. We've talked a lot about doing something that's common in other communities, which is doing a business certification or a business recognition program to give a green star to businesses who are doing green practices, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, encouraging employee carpools or, you know, reducing X percent of their waste stream.
Or local volunteering maybe too.
Yeah.
Community engagement.
Yeah.
Just throwing out ideas. I'll probably have to help out on
meeting. That's right.
Well, good. Now, on the same note, the University of Alaska Southeast, I know you're involved with them. Do you find that they are kind of helping out or providing research? I know there's a lot of work in Alaska on climate change and the Arctic Council. Do you think that complements some of the work you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's, you know, science-based and research-based mm-hmm. stuff. That's mm-hmm. good information for us to use. And when you're looking at, you know, the good data, and UAA has a lot of good stuff, and UAS too. So,
yeah,
UAS, the geologists, professors have a lot of good information, and
the geneticists. There's all kinds of people working out there and in different projects, I'm sure.
Yeah,
you guys can tap into too.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, before we go to the break, Alita, you have the role as chair. Now, how exciting is that? And what got you into that position? Who believed in you to put you there? Did you want to go to be there?
Oh, yes. Well, no, it's been great. The chair has just rotated amongst our members, and it's my turn. But, I've been with the commission for a little over three years, I guess. You know, I started with the city. I was an intern for Maria Gladyszewski doing the city's greenhouse gas emissions inventory, taking our carbon footprint and doing our first baseline as a community. And so that's how I initially got involved with the commission. And mm-hmm. So I've been serving for a couple of years, going to meetings, acting on committees.
Yeah.
And so it's just my turn.
Okay.
To be there. And I'm happy to. And it's a great group that that I work with. And and so I serve for a year, and then we rotate again.
Okay. So you just have to convene the meetings and put up the agenda, that kind of busy work, and lead the meetings.
Yeah, sign my names to, you know, input on hot topics like the AJ Mine.
Okay.
That if you're going to do this, the condition is that you have to, look to using hydropower and kind of energy-based recommendations.
Oh, that's neat. That's great. Wow. Yeah. Okay, so before we go to the break, let's just mention what the resources are out there. You know, we'll do this every time just so people can check out information if they want to read about the Climate Action Plan, for example.
Oh, great. So, okay, so it's juno.org/sustainability is our official city website, and then we also have a blog that's sustainablejuno.blogspot.com.
Great. We are talking to Alita Buss. She is the chair of the Juno Commission on Sustainability. I am Adrienne Lopez here on Focus on Community. Stay tuned for the second part of our show.
It's early morning, not quite 4. The farmer's up and out the door. On little farms all through the state, they're loading bushel, box and crate, while you're sleeping safe and sound. The farmer's driving to your town, bringing fresh grown, fresh picked food your way as the sun wakes up the day. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. like a farm once a week in your neighborhood. It's Farmer's Market Good. And in the park, some local gents set up the tables and some tents. The little trucks come rolling in, and soon the market can begin. Flour straight from the flower bed, and some fragrant, still warm bread. Fruits and veggies of every shape and size, and delicious home-baked pies. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good. Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. The market changes every week, depending what crop's at its peak. First is rhubarb, lettuce, peas, then spinach and strawberries. The local peaches are so nice. Watermelon by the slice. Heirloom tomatoes, corn so tall, and apples in the fall. Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. So if it's still a bit too hard to try and till your whole backyard, there is a place right down the street where all your savvy neighbors meet. And like the seeds that the farmers sow, your whole community will grow. 'Cause beside all the best that the farmer sends, you'll find a brand new crop of friends. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market. Good for the farmer, good for your family. Farmer's Market Good. Life on Earth needs fuel to run. Get our fuel from the light of the sun.
Talking about the chain of food.
How to use that sunlight energy to power the likes of you and me. Well, that's the trick you're about to see. Talking about the chain of food. And the geniuses behind this dance.
Talking about the chain of food.
Are the quiet heroes we call plants.
Talking about the chain.
And the trick that only plants can do is mix water, dirt, and CO2 with sunlight and convert them to
the great stuff we call food.
So think of a leaf or a tree or a shrub.
Change, change, change.
As sunlight that's been changed to grub.
Change, change, change.
So an antelope eats a leafy plant.
Talking about the chain of food.
'Cause the plant makes stuff that an antelope can't.
Talking about the chain.
So the antelope gets fuel to run through the chemical trick the plant has done with light waves shining from the sun.
Talking about the chain of food
and all those plants the antelopes eat.
Chain, chain, chain.
Become delicious antelope meat.
Chain, chain, chain.
To feed the next link in the chain. Hear a hungry lion roar. Antelope's what she's looking for.
Talking about the chain of food.
That solar power she's gonna score was stored as plant and herbivore. And now it'll fuel this carnivore.
Talking about the chain of food.
So that's how light waves from our star.
Change, change, change.
Can turn up at the salad bar.
Change, change, change.
And out there where the wild things are. Chain of food.
Chain of food.
Chain of food.
Welcome back. This is Adrienne Lopez here on Focus on Community on K2O. It's great to be speaking with Alita Buss tonight. She is chair of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability here in Juneau, Alaska, doing some exciting work and projects. And we kind of spent the first part of our show tonight just really highlighting the background and the history and the mission and objectives and even a definition of what sustainability is according to the commission. And maybe we'll bring in some other definitions in this part of the show just to think about the very vast issues and components that sustainability covers in its scope. But we're going to start back also by reminding you who the music was. And I like these songs. They really tie into what we're talking about. It's Tom Chapin, and we listened to Farmer's Market and Chain of Food. So that leads nicely into talking about the Juneau Sunday Market and some of the Farmer's Market work that the Sustainability Commission has promoted here in Juneau. So what have you guys done, Alita?
Oh, good. Everybody likes to talk about food.
So food, yeah, actually.
The Sustainability Commission helped start the now Sunday market. So it was a farmer's market. Actually, initially, it was an annual, one time a year.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Festival.
Okay.
And we still do the big food festival, and it's a huge event, and it has been really crowded. But I guess last year we got a grant from the State Division of Agriculture.
Oh, great.
To do it weekly. We got a little more money. Uh-huh. And so there was a Juneau farmer's market going every week. And then also people remembered the Juneau artist market.
And oh,
so
cool.
Two were happening together. And so this year we kind of had a rebirth and are just calling it the Juneau Sunday Market. And so it's locally crafted art products and then locally grown food too.
Okay.
So merge those two together, because when you go to a market elsewhere, you usually have crafts as well.
Yeah.
As the food option.
That's a good point. Now, has it been hard to identify vendors for these markets every week? I mean, that's a lot. And how do you get local grown food when it's really hard to grow food in Alaska, isn't it?
Yeah, it
some
is.
Things.
Some things, yeah. But there's some really creative people in Juneau, and we've gotten such good support. Of course. The bigger turnout is at the local, the big local food festival, which is the annual event. And this year, that's August 27th on a Saturday, I think that is. But for the Sunday markets, which are noon to 3 at the Jack every week, there's a little lower turnout. You know, we don't quite have the oomph every week yet in this community to get it going. And some of our bigger producers, which are really just backyard growers.
Yeah.
Are not available on Sundays,
no.
And so it's a little bit smaller. But there are people who just like to turn out, and people can do baked goods. Of course, you're required to have meet certain health
yeah.
and safety food regulations from the state. But we're getting vendors who are coming up with starts earlier in the season, raspberry starts. Different herbs to get planted in the ground, and then later in the season, people come out with their carrots and garlic and potatoes, kales, and things like that. So.
Yeah, I mean, some things do grow well in Alaska because of the light all summer, right?
Yep.
Some of those products. Well, great. Do you think there's been a good reception in the local community and more interest in buying local, or, I don't know, the direct market seafood idea? There's even this Full Circle Farms I've heard about in Southeast.
Yeah, the Full Circle Farms is really popular, and lots of people get their boxes of produce from Washington every week, every other week, and that's really growing all throughout Alaska.
Okay.
I just read something, you know, they started in Juneau. A Juneau gal woman contacted the Washington-based CSA, community-supported agriculture farm, and asked them to come to Juneau, and now they have just expanded all across Alaska and are even in villages. Of course, it's much more expensive for them to get really the fresh organic produce. But that's a great deal. And also, Sitka now and Juneau has tied in too to the community supported fishery. And so people are doing that produce box idea and taking it to be a fish box.
So seafood and fish. Great. Yummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our last time on the show, I had Tyson Fick, so we talked a lot about seafood, and he's the communications director for ASME. So, and since then, actually, Tyson, if you're listening, they have a Cook It Frozen app, so you can go on your phone and download an app on your iPhone or whatever and get recipes for cooking your seafood frozen. So,
oh,
It's another plug for ASME. Now, you have a list of all communities around Alaska. This is not just Southeast, and we sometimes forget that Juneau's just not all of Alaska, right? Some people think it is now.
Yeah.
There's other places in Alaska that have these farmers markets.
I think it's so interesting. There are 31.
And 31?
The list is
wow.
Awesome. There's 7 in Anchorage, 1 in Bethel, Copper Valley, Delta Junction, Dillingham, 2 in Eagle River, 1 in Esther, 1 in Fairbanks, Gustavus, Haynes, Homer, Houston, Juneau, Kenai, Kenny Lake, Kodiak, Palmer, Petersburg, Sitka, 2 in Soldotna, 2 in Wasilla, 1 in Willow, and they're organizing one in Wrangell. Maybe they've started it already.
In Wrangell, wow. That's an impressive list. Those are small towns, too. I mean, some of those places you've never even heard of. Kenny Lake I have, because it's close to Valdez, where I'm from. So, okay, so the Food Fest is going to be on August 27th. Let's remind the listeners out there, go get involved, or try to go on Sunday if you can, if you're here in Juneau.
Absolutely. And make it fun. Go with your friends and each buy some different locally produced something. We have artisan breads. We have different produce and fish at that local annual food fest. And then have a potluck that night and have all locally inspired food.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And invite us. We'll give you our phone numbers. Just kidding. Great. Well, let's move on because there's a lot of other projects the commission has worked on. And I know we even had a question from a listener last night when I was promoting the show on the Climate Action Plan. And we'll wait for the question, but let's just give some background on what this group has done. And it's really, I think, in a way, probably the biggest accomplishment maybe for this group. I'm just speaking, you know, with the little knowledge I have, but it seems like a really big deal to have a whole Climate Action Plan.
It is, yeah. And not too many communities in Alaska have done it.
Mm-hmm.
It's step 3 in this Climate Action project that the city is committed to, so we've already, like I said, done that baseline of what are our emissions, and we've set a reduction target, and now we're doing this climate action plan, which really is going to give us some strategy of how can we implement different actions to reduce our energy usage. It's been really good. It also updates that 2007 baseline energy use data that we have.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Are there any stats from the energy use here? Are there surprising, I don't know, high numbers of use? I know Juneau is mainly run on hydropower, right, for those outside of the city.
It is. 90-something percent of Juneau's hydropower, or of Juneau's electricity, is hydropower.
It's hydro, okay.
But actually, about 75% of Juneau's energy is still fossil fuel.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's a big difference in what people in people's perception, because we think that everything's hydropower, but actually we still have a lot that runs on fossil fuel, and namely, like, most of our building heat is that way, and and transportation, of course, is all. I mean, ALMP is encouraging consumers to get electric cars and to offer a special rate for electric vehicles. But, you know, most of us are still going to the pump for gasoline.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, actually, the electric car idea, I think, has come up as a great solution for Juneau because it's a locked-in city. It's like an island, you know, so you can't go that far.
Right?
I mean,
yeah.
It'd be cool to promote some of these new cars that are out there
for local people. Yeah, you can get cars before you can plug in somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So has the city talked about that? I know I saw somewhere that the city and borough of Juneau, CBJ, had mentioned getting their state vehicle or their city vehicles to be electric cars. If not already, I don't know.
That's a good question for the CBJ Green Team.
Okay.
They are working as a group of staff people from CBJ to talk about some different green initiatives.
Okay. And actually, yeah, that was another project that we can talk about after climate action.
Yeah,
so what other ways to reduce? Give us some ideas of what is in the action plan for reducing the carbon footprint or the emissions here in Juneau.
Well, one thing that I think has come up a lot recently is land use. And a lot of Juneauites have heard about the Willoughby District land use plan.
Yeah.
So the area by where the Jack is and the State Museum and the public safety building, the state building there, that's all the Willoughby District. And so kind of long-range planning, what to do with that space, and to encourage from that plan to encourage just, you know, easier access for pedestrians and multi-use, like they're talking mm-hmm. about putting housing in there.
Oh, wow.
And making it a cultural center. The new plans, that ties in with the state's plan to build a new museum facility there.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
combining the state libraries, archives, and museums into one big state-of-the-art building. And then new talk if the new state office building would go into that Willoughby District area. You know, maybe district heating would be appropriate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As, you know, Montpelier, Vermont is a capital city, and they just finished, the voters of the city decided to put a municipal bond to fund the rest of a district heating plan run
on
wood heating that's all locally produced. And so, you know, if Juneau could do that with the Willoughby District, you know, and run and maybe do local wood pellets,
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
CELAC
yeah.
has done with their boiler, and
yeah.
all those really big buildings that are going in, you know, looking more for the long term, the next 10
mm-hmm.
years, type project, and converting maybe some of the existing buildings like Centennial Hall or the Jack or the state office building.
Yeah.
Tying them together.
Over to the wood pellets. I know that's been talked about in our renewable energy cluster group about this emerging industry. There'd be a lot of potential here
yeah.
for this planning. So, well, great.
And what are some other action plans that the Climate Action Plan, it's still in progress. It's
okay.
It started in January and it's supposed to be done by the
okay.
end of the year. And so,
and there's public comment, right?
Public
comment. Can participate in the process.
Yep. Actually, the consultants that are doing this work for the city are presenting the draft climate action plan to the assembly on Monday.
Oh, really?
So next Monday, the August 1st, there'll be a presentation of the plan as it is now, and then there'll be a chance for public comment in the fall again.
Oh, great.
They'll present the sort of final-ish plan to the assembly to approve it in the later part of the year.
Okay. So that's a call out. Everyone listening who wants to comment on the Climate Action Plan can do that, right? Get involved.
Yeah.
And have an opinion on it. Now, do you have to be a Juneau resident to do that? Could you be a resident of Montpelier, Vermont?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Where are our listeners tonight? Vermont, Chile.
Or down in Chile.
Norway.
Well, that's good to know. So in the fall, we'll have a chance because I know not everybody's going to be able to go on next Monday night, but maybe in the next couple months, look at it online and give some input.
Yeah, and the links should be on the Sustainability Commission's website online.
Okay.
You can access Scheinberg Associates webpage from the city website.
From the city of Juneau website, yeah. Yeah. Now, there was a question from one of our listeners, and I just want to bring it up because it's important to thank listeners and appreciate that they write in with questions. And my friend Brad McAllister, he's actually the director of WAP Sustainability, and WAP is What About People Sustainability down in Tennessee. And he says, Alita, considering Juneau's location and role as the state's capital as of recent years, have you seen an increase in the prioritization in climate adaptation programs versus climate mitigation programs? If so, has this increased focus on adaptation translated to financial commitments from policymakers and greater buy-in by the general community? This is a big question. Within all the various elements of adaptation, which are seen as the most pressing by those working on the issues? Wow. That's a big question, Brad. Thanks for writing in with that. Do you want to tackle part of that?
sure. Let's do it. Okay, so the first question he asked is about adaptation versus
mitigation. Yes.
And so do we have to define those first? Or?
Maybe. I'm trying to recall the definition of both of them.
Adaptation is more like, okay, there's this thing going on. What are we going to do to kind of
yeah.
address this immediate
yeah.
concern? And so I think of Shishmaref and Nutak are village coastal communities in Alaska's northwest
mm-hmm.
that are experiencing erosion on their coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, the state and the feds have funded seawalls and relocated the village back a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and so those are some examples of adaptation, and that's, you know,
kind of reacting.
Reacting.
Yeah.
And primarily, I think that's federal funding, but I think the state has funded a seawall or two.
So those are adaptation policies, right?
Yeah, and then mitigation is then kind of anticipating things
mm-hmm,
that are coming up
mm-hmm.
and dealing with those. And so I think of in Juneau, the Juneau International Airport, just when it was doing its remodel, put in a ground source heat pump. And so
yeah.
I don't know the percentages, but, you know, a lot of the heat is from this renewable resource.
Great.
As well as the new pool.
Oh, yeah.
You have gone down the new slide.
I want to.
In the valley.
It looks fun.
Yeah, so fun. So those are some, so that's kind of adaptation versus mitigation. And how has this translated into financial commitments from policymakers? I think another example of mitigation is all the weatherization and energy efficiency things that we're doing with different energy programs. And so maybe some of your neighbors have done the energy rebate program and an energy auditor to come in and say, hey, this is how energy efficient you are. You can do X, Y, and Z to, you know, you can seal your attic, you can re-insulate your walls, change your light bulbs, and then get money back for that.
Yeah.
You can put upfront the cost, or there's also an income-eligible program for weatherization as well.
Oh, wow.
And those have been hugely supported at the state level. The legislature put in, again, this year, appropriations to the tune of $36 million to keep those programs running because they've been very popular, and policymakers recognize that people are using the programs. You know, it's updating our state's infrastructure. And they're smart. So
that's great. Is there? I don't know if you know if it's being used all over the state. If people are using it out in the far remote areas of Alaska as well.
Yeah, they are, and in they have an EnergyWise program in rural Alaska as well. That's more of an education piece. So they come in and tell villagers that if they just unplug their coffee pot and put it in a carafe for the day, that saves them $400 a year. And
wow.
So where energy prices are so expensive for some of these rural areas in Alaska, just something small like that makes such a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, so I guess the legislature, I looked at my sheet. The proper numbers are $64 million for weatherization and $37.5 million for the energy rebate program. And then there's an additional $36 million for the next round of Renewable Energy Fund grant programs, which are fun.
Yeah, and actually maybe when we come back from the break, we could talk a little bit more about that, get into a little bit of the renewable energy stuff with the state. And I just, one last question there. Does that also tie into a nationwide program, right? I think the Obama administration has been promoting a lot of this as well, like getting a rebate back. Well, I know the car. I know my sister traded her car and got some money back for getting my energy efficient car. So there's this kind of whole movement, and it's a win-win for the environment and for your pocketbook.
Yeah.
Right. So before we go to the break, one last thing. You had a new definition of sustainability that will kind of open our eyes to the definitions out there, and then we'll have one more.
Okay, so this equates democracy with sustainability. So you can think about both of these big ideas in a similar way. And so Richard Fox, who is with a nonprofit organization, Trees, Water, and People in Fort Collins, Colorado-based, said, democracy, sustainability, is not something we made once. It is an ongoing, evolving experiment in working collectively. We are the ones on the cutting edge of that powerful force.
Nice. That kind of opens up the mind a little bit to the other areas of sustainability. Good. On that note, I'm talking with Alita Buss. She is chairwoman of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. We'll be right back here on Focus on Community. Stay tuned.
If I were an apple, I'd be very unhappy traveling 4,000 miles or more. From far off Tasmania in a shipping container to a shelf in a New Jersey store. Why should I be tortured when some New Jersey orchard would be totally thrilled to the core? To pick me and crate me and load me and freight me, not 4,000 miles, but 4. An apple should be not far from the tree where it ripens in the fall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. If I were a berry dairy, I expect I'd be very contrary and hardly inclined to get shipped out from Chile to a store in North Philly. Hey, I'd have to be out of my mind. It seems paradoxic and carbon dioxic that we force all our food to commute, wasting gallons of fuel, which we know isn't cool for people or planets or fruit. A berry is fine, not far from its vine, near the farmer's market stall. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Yeah. Might want to take home. Do not buy for your table till you check out the label and determine how far it did roam. Aside from the karma of helping the farmer who lives in your county or state, there is one more good reason to buy what's in season. The taste is incredibly great. So keep buying foods from regional dudes. Keep your carbon footprint small. Locally grown and locally eaten is globally good, good, good for us all. Good, good, good for us all.
Share up to us to get it there.
Welcome back. This is Adrienne Lopez here, host of Focus on Community Tonight, July 25th. I've been talking with Alita Bus, chairwoman of the Juno Commission on Sustainability. And just real quick, we were listening to Tom Chapin, and he's had some great songs related to sustainability on the show tonight. Recently, you listened to Locally Grown and Life Grows On, and this is from the CD Give Peas a Chance. And before I forget, and I will repeat it probably later, but Martha Moore is in the studio with us tonight, volunteering as an engineer, and so we like to thank everybody who's out volunteering. I guess we all are, but it's important to remind the listeners out there, the people that come in and help out with public radio, K2O here in Juneau, Alaska. So to tie back into what we were talking about earlier, Alita, we kind of were highlighting the projects being done by the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. The Climate Action Plan was one of them. The Farmers Market, the Food Fest coming up on August 27th. There's a website, I believe, right?
JunoSundayMarket.org.
Yes, JunoSundayMarket.org. If you are a vendor out there listening or you want to get involved either on a weekly basis or stop by the Food Fest at the end of the month in August. And it's also interesting, you know, we look at sustainability and social responsibility, however you define it, and government can play a key role. Private sector and government, they both play a key role. I think private sector probably more because they're the ones that really can push and can be on the cutting edge and innovate quicker. But government also can promote good practices. And part of the commission has looked at what the local community is doing, or the local CBJ. Which is?
The CBJ Green Team.
Yeah.
And our commission, the Sustainability Commission, has a liaison with the CBJ Green Team.
Okay.
And Gail Wood was doing that until recently. Gail Wood of AEMP, and as most of you know, she's moving on. And so we might have designated a new liaison at the last meeting, but I don't know who that person is. And but they're doing a lot of great work with, you know, for all of you city employees out there. You might have heard of the work that the CBJ Green Team is doing to make more efficient the city local government operations.
Yeah, and that's exciting. You know, practice what you preach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So get those employees engaged. And in the private sector, too, you said you're excited about a project with beer, which we all like, right?
Yes. The brewery is being so green. We're so proud of them and happy to drink their beer to support the work they're doing. They are in the process of building a spent grain boiler, which will displace two-thirds of their fossil fuel usage.
Wow.
And so all this time they've had to ship out the spent grain.
Okay.
And it's very, you know, it's expensive for them, and they're actually going to take that energy and turn it back into their operations.
Wow. Wow, and actually, yeah, I hope to get somebody from the brewery on in the future to talk about that project. I think it would warrant a whole show just to talk about how they are kind of innovating and leading breweries around the world, I hope, right?
Absolutely, yeah, they'll be a great guest on your show.
And they'll bring some Alaskan beer. good, so private industry, you know, you have to recognize what they're doing and encourage them and also reward them because those are the people who can inspire other companies as well. And so moving on to local and kind of statewide, getting outside the scope of the commission a little bit, I know you also work on some issues of sustainability in the state legislature. You work for Senator Dennis Egan and have seen the advancement and progress of SB Senate Bill 220 since it was adopted, I think, in 2009, right, or 10.
Yeah, it was signed into law in July of last year, 2010, so
okay.
It's called Alaska's Sustainable Energy Act. And there's been a lot of different, you know, incentive programs and different renewable energy and energy efficiency work that's come from that.
Great, great. And people might be like, what? Alaska's all about oil, right? I mean, isn't that what brings in the money? But it seems like I think people are really taking this as something they get excited about. And it's bipartisan, right? There's been support from all sides.
Yeah, huge. The two bill sponsors, one was a Republican and one was a Democrat, both in the Senate bipartisan majority working group. So everybody can get behind it. It saves money. It's, you know, it's better for the environment.
Yeah, excellent. So we hope to see more progress in the coming session in January with this bill, or has it kind of been adopted and it's being implemented in state government?
Well, programs will always be ongoing, and so programs that rely on annual appropriations from the legislature, like the you know, the popular rebate and weatherization programs that we talked about will keep coming up every year, although the programs are already established. But some things that the state is actively working on right now is retrofitting public facilities. So they want to do 25% by 2020 to make them, you know, seal up that envelope. Just kind of update our infrastructure for some of our big buildings out there. And the goal here is to generate 50% of Alaska's electricity through renewable energy by 2025.
That's ambitious.
So it's good to have a goal, you know, we all
for
know
sure.
in our daily lives, and kind of for this big bureaucracy to work towards something. So
that's great.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And it's not just, you know, state work of the legislature, but all of us as well. And I know a little bit later we'll talk about how each of us, you know, has a role and an impact and can make a difference too, right?
Yeah.
So you presented to the Cluster Working Group last week, the Cluster Working Group on Renewable Energy. Do you see those kind of groups as important to this kind of advancement of policy in the state of Alaska?
Absolutely. And I think you know a little bit more about the Cluster Working Group than I do. It's regional, but also statewide. And so it's these different stakeholders, private business, government, quasi-government entities that are coming together to say, how can we make renewable energy industry work in Southeast Alaska? And how can we get a biomass industry off the ground? How can we, you know, do other things?
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting projects. And it's renewable energy, and they're talking about ocean products and forest, and there's actually a renewable energy component to all those. Each of those groups have come up with this need for energy, for cheaper energy, too. So actually, if you want more information, you can go to southeastclusterinitiative.com. That's a website we've been working on. But I don't want to talk too much about that. You're the focus of the evening, Alina. But so when you talk about this Sustainable Energy Act, do we see other states that we're kind of benchmarking against? Are there some really progressive states out there that have taken this on and we're kind of following their lead?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, every state has a different size, different kind of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just will differ. But, you know, California has saved a lot of money on from their green initiatives, and Portland's a really green city. You know, they have great public transportation, and San Francisco has banned plastic bags, and that's something
that
will come up this fall on the ballot, is whether or not you want to add a fee to discourage the use of plastic bags at the grocery store. That'll be a hot topic, I think, at this municipal election in October.
Wow.
In places like Ireland, it's, you know, really reduced the amount of garbage bags.
Grocery bags, yeah.
That wind up in the ocean or wind up as litter. I was just talking to my roommate about this one on the way over because, you know, I take those grocery bags and I use them as a garbage bag.
Yeah,
and
a lot of us do.
And so what do you do if you are good about it and you use that as a garbage bag and it goes to the landfill? And so then do you have to go buy your own, pay for a plastic garbage bag?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is a good, clean way to do it. But maybe no plastic bags are necessary, and you can just put your garbage directly in your garbage bin and keep wet garbage to the side.
It's
kind of a lifestyle thing because we're so kind of habitualized to taking those grocery bags. And a lot of us have cloth bags, but leave them in the car. So
I hate it every time I go into the grocery store. I'm like, swearing at the guy, and he's like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "I just forgot my bag. I wish I would have remembered." Sometimes I use plastic bag I'll take in. But I did sign a petition. Actually, I changed my residency over to Juneau so I could sign the petition on that, actually. My friend Marina Lindsay was involved. They were all collecting signatures at Silver Bow the other day.
Good.
So,
well, I'm glad
we'll see what comes of the initiative.
Exactly. I don't want to advocate one way or the other, but I'm just, I guess I'm glad that the voters are going to decide because it's been such a community hot topic for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And so this will kind of decide what we want to do as individuals and collectively, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Now, kind of to wrap it up, I always like to ask what the challenges are, and this brings it back to the commission, the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, and how you see the future of this commission and what issues will come up next year to prioritize. What are the challenges you face? Is it participation, buy-in from other local groups? What's the vision for
the vision
next
and the
couple
challenges.
Years.
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping to wrap up our sustainability indicators this year so that we can measure progress with sustainability. And we're also going to have the climate action plan done this year. So the next step from that is to implement the strategies that are recommended to us by our great consultants and then just track our progress and keep an eye on what our carbon footprint is, our energy use as a community.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess a challenge is, you know, each of us has to make, like, slight adjustments and just doing that. So after the avalanche, people were kind of forced to because it hit their pocketbooks, so obviously hard. And maybe just reminding everybody that, you know, you can do little things like get a low-flow shower head and little changes in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, yeah. Now, for those out there that might be like, oh, the avalanche, what was that about? Because maybe some people will listen to this from outside of Juneau and want to know what that was. So just 2 seconds on what that was and how it affected people here locally.
Oh, sure. We get our power from a hydro plant that's connected with a transmission line to the town, and an avalanche wiped out the power source, basically.
Wow.
And so they had the power company had to switch over to diesel-generated power, which sent the price of a kilowatt hour of electricity up fivefold.
Wow.
And so where we were paying 11-cent kilowatt hours, somewhere around there, we were paying 55-cent kilowatt hours-ish. And so people really turned around their actions, and we saw a huge, something like 30% energy reduction as a community. And
wow.
People were turning off their lights, and businesses, you walked in and they had half the overheads on, and it was just a really big community-wide, you could just sense it in the whole place.
This kind of collective action.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. Well, and on that note, all of us have to contribute, right, Alita? And you ride your bike or you walk to work. It's convenient here in Juneau. I know I live downtown, so I'm close to work as well. What are some of your green actions? How do you live?
Yeah, sure. I just started a garden recently, and I grow, one of the things I grow is mint, and so last night before dinner, we had cocktails with mint.
Nice.
In the drinks, we had mojitos.
Yum.
And there's nothing better than, you know, a good mojito drink made from...
Yes, when it's nice and warm outside.
And so that's very sustainable as well. So another thing I do is I use a laptop instead of a...
PC? PC.
Yeah. And so laptops use 50% less than a desktop computer when they're plugged in, and then they use about 1% of the energy when they're powered by battery. And so,
oh, neat.
Of course, sometimes it's really more comfortable to have a desktop computer, and I get that, and I use that at work, but laptops are very energy efficient. I also recycle.
Good.
And then an important step in recycling is to buy recycled products.
Yeah.
So, it's not quite as plush, but I buy, you know, recycled paper products and toilet paper and things like that.
Excellent. Well, good work. I think you can inspire us all to live this daily actions and be more green.
Yes. Well, you walk to work, too, so good
job.
Pat on the back.
And I rode the subway for 7 years.
And you can ride the bus if you live in the valley.
That's true. I'm learning how to do that as well. So, well, I just want to thank you again, Alita, Chair of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. Let's remind everybody the websites they can check out.
Juneau.org/sustainability or sustainablejuneau.blogspot.com. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks to Martha Moore again. She's here in the studio at K2O in Juneau. She's the engineer who's been volunteering and putting up with us all night. And stay tuned in August. I'll actually be launching my own weekly show. I'm still finalizing the details, but I'll have something weekly and get interviews with exciting people making an impact, not just in Juneau, but around the state of Alaska. So that's it for me. Thanks again, Alita.
Thank you.
Thank you to everybody listening. Have a great night.